It's a Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On this week's Walnut Wednesday episode, Taylor Chalstrom has a report about new walnut breeding opportunities in the state. And Vicki Boyd will be in. She talks with Dustin Harrell, director of the Rice Experiment Station, as he previews the upcoming August 31st Rice Field Day. And I'll have a check-in of regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
According to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service's latest California crop progress and condition report, average lows for California ranged from 38 to 66 degrees in the mountains last week, 48 to 74 along the coast, 54 to 73 degrees in the Central Valley, and 57 to 87 in the desert. Average highs for the state range from 63 to 102 along the coast, 72 to 97 in the mountains, 89 to 107 in the Central Valley, and 92 to 107 in the desert. As for fruit crops, stone fruit harvest, pruning and topping continued. Peach, nectarine, and plum harvest remained steady. Reflective tarps were being placed to improve color for some citrus fruits. Raisin grape varieties steadily developed. Table grape harvest began to pick up. Persimmons, kiwi fruits, Asian pears, grapefruits, and lemons continued to develop. Old citrus groves were being removed to make way for new plantings. Pomegranate maturation continued, and olives continued to develop. In the nut crops, almond harvest was underway, weed and pest spraying continued, walnut and pistachio development was ongoing, old walnut orchards were removed to make way for new plantings. And in the vegetable crops, Capay Valley harvest of organic cherry tomatoes, heirloom tomatoes, and green beans continued in Colusa, Sacramento, Solano, and Yolo counties. Processing tomato harvest continued. In Stanislaus County, tomato harvest continued, and harvested fields were disked. In Tulare County, eggplants, sweet corn, peppers, okra, salad greens, herbs, onions, squash, tomatoes, and other vegetables were harvested and sold at local stands and markets. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced it is awarding $197 million for 41 locally led conservation projects through the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. RCPP is a partner-driven program that leverages partner resources to advance innovative projects that address climate change, enhance water quality, and address other critical challenges on agricultural land. Partners are experts in their fields and understand the challenges in their own backyards, according to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. He said through RCPP, they can tap into that knowledge in partnership with producers and USDA to come up with lasting solutions to the challenges that farmers, ranchers, and landowners face. He said they're looking forward to seeing the results of public-private partnership at its best, made possible through these RCPP investments. A project in California is a partnership that will aim to bolster pollinators at farms and ranches through the development of habitat, forage, and other support, using grower connections to secure the participation of producers across a wide swath of a 10-county project area. The objective is to increase the presence of bees, butterflies, and other important invertebrate species. Butterfly, a Los Angeles-based private equity firm specializing in the food sector, recently announced a closing of its sophomore fund. Nearly doubling in size from the previous vintage, the fund closed with commitments of $1 billion from a wide range of partners, including institutional investors, family offices, entrepreneurs, and food investors. Together with its previous fund and co-investments, Butterfly has nearly $4 billion of assets under management. The announcement comes after Butterfly signed a definitive agreement to acquire Doba and Apollo Global Management and merge it with its existing brands to form a leading fast casual restaurant platform in North America with nearly 800 restaurants. In addition, Butterfly and Bolthouse Farms, the number one super premium refrigerated beverage brand and largest carrot supplier to North American retailers, announced the acquisition of Evolution Fresh from Starbucks earlier in the month, accelerating Bolthouse's leadership in a premium juice and refrigerated beverage categories in retail. Butterfly also sold a majority interest in Orgain, the U.S.'s leading plant-based functional nutrition platform, to Nestle Health Science earlier this year. Launched in 2016 by Adam Wagle, a former KKR executive, and Dustin Beck, a former Vista Equity Partners and Riot Games executive, Butterfly invests in vital and innovative food companies spanning the entire value chain from seed to fork. 100 years after his grandfather settled in Orange County and began growing barley, tomatoes, and other crops on several acres he rented in Yorba Linda, Dan Manicero is keeping a family tradition alive at the original Manicero Farms through the challenges facing farmers today. Manicero and his wife Ann celebrated the farm's centennial on Saturday at its market and event space in Irvine, where they shared samples of freshly grown tomatoes, watermelon, and onions. The strawberries grown on Manicero Farms were at one time distributed to major grocery stores in the United States, Canada, and overseas in Europe. At its height, the farm was operating on about 120 acres. But in the last decade, in response to rising costs, including water, labor, and fuel, the Maniceros have shifted to a more local model for growing and selling their products. On roughly 50 acres that the farm leases from Southern California Edison, the family grows sweet corn, heirloom tomatoes, squash, cauliflower, and a host of other vegetables throughout the year. They're sold at farm stands in Irvine, Tustin, and Brea, along with local honeys, balsamic vinaigrettes, and household items. The switch from wholesale to small retail and agricultural tourism has been a learning curve for the family, according to Ann Manicero. She said because that's not something they ever intended to have to do. At the farm's flagship location in Irvine, off Jeffrey Road, community members can rent the space for weddings, parties, and corporate events. Farm staffers always try to incorporate a lesson on the produce in any event that the farm is hosting. And there is a play area for kids to allow them to hop on a carousel or other rides while surrounded by local artwork featuring fruits and vegetables. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has released its Pesticide Residue Monitoring Program report for fiscal year 2020. Since 1987, a report has summarized the findings from the program's annual monitoring of human and animal foods in the U.S. The FDA found that 96.8% of domestic foods were compliant with the pesticide tolerances set by the Environmental Protection Agency. No pesticides were found in 40.8% of the domestic samples. The industry's historical high compliance rate demonstrates its commitment to consumers' health and safety. It is clear from this report that consumers can choose fresh fruits and vegetables with confidence, and also underscores that no one and no group should promote false rhetoric in an effort to discourage consumers from eating healthy and safe produce. According to the FDA, the COVID-19 pandemic impacted the FDA's sample collection and analysis for this year's report. Both human food and animal food samples collected in FY 2020 were smaller than in FY 2019. Despite the obstacles, results from samples collected and analyzed demonstrated compliance rates similar to what has been shown in previous years. Through its pesticide residue monitoring program, the agency ensures that FDA-regulated foods comply with pesticides safety levels or tolerances set by the Environmental Protection Agency to protect public health. The EPA is responsible for establishing and enforcing those tolerances for domestic food shipped in interstate commerce and foods imported into the United States. The Alliance for Food and Farming recommends consumers who still have concerns about residues to wash fruits and vegetables. FDA states that washing produce often removes or eliminates any minute residues that may be present. According to EarthWeb, Amazon reports that its Prime version has more than 200 million members in 22 countries in April of 2021. From accessories to clothing to toiletries, households can get just about anything with one click through their Amazon app. Fresno County, California, dairy farmer Steve Maddox knew that his wife loved Amazon and found his own appreciation for Amazon by utilizing their shipping service. Earlier this month, an Amazon Prime truck hauled premium alfalfa dairy hay from his Logan, Utah hay ranch to his Riverdale, California dairy farm. Amazon worked with a dispatcher who was then able to fill the truck with Maddox's milk cow alfalfa hay, although the load of hay did not qualify for free shipping. Amazon Prime hauled 21 tons of hay from their ranch to their dairy. The shipping cost was $1,250. He says his hay trucking cost is down from its peak in December of 2021 at around $2,000, but up considerably from 8 years ago. The cost of trucking from Utah, California back then was between $900 to $1,000. Maddox Dairy milks 4,000 cows with an equal number of heifers and farms 1,600 acres of almonds. He also has several hundred acres of wine grapes, as well as cropland to supply feed for their cattle.
According to Maddox, Amazon Prime has many orders heading east but lacks loads coming west, and they are looking to backhaul. Delivered in a straight truck, Maddox says they used a forklift and a ramp to unload the 1,400-pound bales. He says they have 2,500 tons of hay that we get moved from Utah to California. That is 120 loads in our truck from June to the first part of November. Sometimes they will store the hay in Utah and move it west when they need it. Amazon is known for its quick deliveries. When the big semi-truck showed up, Maddox did not question what his wife had ordered and realized there are many benefits to holding a Prime membership.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference. There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In this Walnut Wednesday report, Taylor Chalstrom talks about new walnut breeding opportunities in the state of California.
Walnut breeding in the state of California has come a long way, and the next few decades pose many opportunities for breeding in the industry as well as some challenges. In spring 2021, the industry saw the release of UC Wolfskill, the Walnut Improvement Program's 23rd cultivar. Like other recent releases, including Ivanhoe and Solano, Wolfskill is heterozygous for the lateral-bearing allele, but does not contain the late-leafing allele from Franquette. For this reason, Wolfskill leaves out in mid-March, sometime during spring rains, and does not follow the blight avoidance strategy of late-leafing Chandler, Howard, and Tulare. This signals the Walnut Improvement Program's changing of direction in multiple facets. Another issue that is causing the improvement program to change direction is the reduction in chill hours in the state. There may be some healthy disagreement over exactly how quickly that's going to happen, but it's a fair bet, according to Pat J. Brown with UC Davis, that the state is already seeing in some years late-leafing cultivars having more stagger bloom and other problems related to inadequate chill.
If you think about the future, it looks like we're going to have less chilling on average in the valley. That's one thing to work on. Shelf life, I think, is another one. If we can come up with walnut varieties that have higher antioxidants, that's going to increase both their nutrition for the consumer and increase their shelf life. It'll make sure that consumers don't get rancid walnuts, and that'll probably make people buy more walnuts.
There are a few aspects, including genetics, that play into the rancidity of a given walnut.
The total amount of antioxidants in the kernel, also the oil content and the composition of those oils also play into it. All of those are genetically controlled. So there's a few levers we can sort of twist to try to increase the shelf life.
Another issue to look at is the time it takes to breed a new walnut variety. Historically, this process is not a short one, and the industry is looking for ways to accelerate it.
If you look at Wolfskill, which just came out in 2021, that cross was made in 2003. So that's a long time, and I'm patient, but I'm not that patient. And so, there's a couple of things we can do. One is we can use DNA markers now to, in a sense, predict the future. And so that's useful because it means we can throw away stuff that's predicted to be bad before we even plant it into the field. There's another component to this, which is a sort of closer cooperation with growers. So in other words, the faster we can get a new variety out into growers' fields, and preferably lots of growers up and down the valley, I think the faster we're gonna know if that variety has legs and if it's gonna be the next you know, the next Chandler.
Another difficult puzzle in walnut breeding is how to craft a cultivar that is not only more profitable for growers, but also produces a product with superior nutrition, appearance, and taste. It is no secret that walnuts are healthy. The kernels contain high levels of polyunsaturated fatty acids, a kind of healthy fat also found in seafood and flaxseed. And the walnut skin, or pellicle, contains high levels of tannins, which have been associated with a variety of health benefits. But polyunsaturated fats have a shorter shelf life at room temperature than other fats, and some consumers find the astringency of tannins unappealing. This falls under the same vein of producing varieties with higher edible yields.
Got a few things in the pipe with higher edible yield. So Wolfskill is higher than Chandler, but there's stuff that is even higher than that. And I think particularly now that China is coming out with these varieties with very high edible yields, hand harvested, so they don't have to worry about shell strength. But I think we need to really push the envelope and think about how high we can push the edible yield while maintaining the ability to machine harvest.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has promoted the funding included in the Inflation Reduction Act for USDA conservation programs. The legislation will deliver $19.5 billion in new conservation funding to support climate-smart agriculture. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says President Biden and Congress have taken an important historic step towards easing the burden of inflation on the American public and meeting the moment on climate. The funding will bolster the new steps that USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service announced this week to improve opportunities for nutrient management. NRCS will target funding, increase program flexibilities, and launch a new outreach campaign to promote nutrients management economic benefits and expand partnerships to develop nutrient management plans. It is the first of USDA's broader effort to address future fertilizer availability and cost challenges for U.S. producers. Through USDA's conservation programs, farmers will have streamlined opportunities to improve their nutrient management planning, which provides conservation benefits while mitigating the impacts of supply chain disruptions and increased input costs. The National Association of Conservation Districts has announced $15 million in technical assistance grants. The grants continue funding to nearly 500 conservation districts in 49 states and territories. Funded by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service, the grant program is in its fifth year. The program allows NACD to accelerate on-the-ground conservation by increasing the capacity available to conduct outreach and deliver technical assistance. Grant funding supports over 490 positions, including technicians, conservation planners, program support specialists, and technical specialists. All these employees will provide conservation technical assistance to help customers carry out their conservation plans. Over the life of the program, grantees have delivered service in 50 states and 3 territories. Conservation districts have awarded more than 30,000 farm bill conservation contracts and assisted with over 55,000 additional EQIP contracts. Their work has benefited over 2.5 million acres, improving soil health, forest and woodland conditions, wildlife habitat, and water quality. USDA's latest data on the nation's cotton production forecast has led to adjustments in both the U.S. and world cotton balance sheets this month. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Changes to the U.S. cotton production forecast this month.
An expectation of a very high abandonment rate in the southern plains. We had a sharp reduction in harvested area, so harvested area down by about 1.3 million acres, and production down 2.93 million bales.
Is also the big driver in global production and supply adjustments for August. That according to USDA World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jetkanowski.
That shows up in the global balance sheet as a pretty significant reduction in global production,
facilitating some of the month-over-month tightening of world supply and demand categories, including ending stocks. Likewise, the domestic balance sheet has also been adjusted in various categories. Despite lower mill use and trade forecasted, ending stocks are still down month-over-month and year-over-year, contributing to a 2-cent increase in the season-ending average price for cotton. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
California will play host to a Rice Field Day on August 31st. Vicki Boyd has the report.
Dustin Harrell, the new director at the California Rice Experiment Station, plans to keep the August 31st Rice Field Day format fairly much unchanged this year. And backed by popular demand, after a one-year absence, is sushi, which has become a fan favorite part of lunch. The Rice Experiment Station is located off of Highway 99 and Road 162 near the town of Biggs. The field day program involves a business meeting followed by two sets of field tours. One set highlights projects on the station's main campus. The other one across Hamilton Road involves weed research. Harrell encouraged attendees to arrive early at 7:30 a.m. so they have time to register, sign up for continuing education credits, and take in research posters.
We're going to keep the field day this year very close to the similar traditional program that they've had here at the Rice Experiment Station. We're going to start the event at around 7:30. This is time where you'll be able to come in and join the registration and sign up for those continuing education credits that a lot of us like to get. And it's also an opportunity to where we're going to start our poster session. And this is our poster sessions and demonstrations where we have research-based scientific posters out there. I think this year we have approximately 19 scientific posters that can be viewed during that time. So that's going to happen between 7:30, 8:30. Beginning about 8:30, we're going to start our general session. And during the general session, we'll have our chairman welcome you to the event. I'll provide a station update and as well as a Roxy update, what's going on with our new herbicide tolerant rice that we're developing. You'll hear typical business meeting stuff like a financial report, nominations committee. You'll get a Rice Research Trust report from our trust chairman, Mr. Steve Willey. And then we're going to give out a few awards, probably for our students. We're going to give the Dr. Marlon Brandon Rice Research Fellowship Award to one deserving student. And then you'll also, the highlight of the business indoor meeting, will be the announcement of the California Rice Industry Award, which will go to a very deserving individual this year.
Harrell said he has added an extra stop to the main station tour to allow all of the UC Davis cooperators a chance to speak.
We're going to have five stops this year on the field tour, each of them highlighting a different scientific aspect. And as you mentioned, a lot of that's going to be rice breeding. The first stop will be a long and short grain breeding program, which will have Professor Milana and Dr. Sharma talk about new developments in long grain and short grain breeding. We'll also have an update on our genome-wide selection project, which will help us develop newer and better varieties and help the selection process more quickly. We'll also have a stop, Dr. Kent McKenzie. He was the previous rice breeder and director here at the station, who is now our Roxy consultant. He's going to talk about the Roxy rice production system and what varieties you can expect coming out of that program. And then we'll have Dr. Teresa De Leon. She's going to talk about our medium grain breeding project and herbicide tolerant rice breeding as well. Two new varieties that will be talked about during that program will include 19Y per thousand. This is going to be our first Roxy herbicide tolerant rice release. We're actually going to name it RXM21. RX for Roxy, M for medium grain. 2 will represent the maturity of that variety. 2 would be early maturing, 1 would be very early maturing, 3 would be intermediate, and 4 would be late. So this one's going to be an early maturing variety, and the 1 just represents it's going to be our very first release. RXM21 is basically M210, which is a Calrose medium grain variety with blast resistance, very similar to M206. It's just M206 with blast resistance. And the RXM21 will be basically Calrose with blast resistance and our herbicide tolerant Roxy trait in it. So if all goes well, hopefully we'll be releasing that next year. The other thing you're going to hear about is a new short grain release that'll possibly be released this year. This came out of Dr. Teresa de Leon's project when she was a short grain breeder. This was a 17Y2087. This is a new premium quality short grain. You know, some of the big things about this new premium quality short grain is it has a 15% yield advantage over our Calicari 202, which is our other premium grain short quality. And it also has a little bit better vigor than Calicari 202. Not quite as much as Calicari 201, but it does have more vigor than the 202 and this big yield advantage with a 15% yield advantage. That kind of covers the breeding aspect, but we're also going to highlight some of our University of California Davis cooperators, and they're going to talk about some of their research. We're going to have Dr. Bruce Lindquist and Ian Grettenberger. They're going to have a stop where they're going to talk about rice agronomy, fertility, and insect management. We'll also have a stop featuring Dr. Luis Espino and Whitney Brim DeForest, and they're going to talk about pest management and a red rice update.
As in years past, attendees will hop chartered buses to cross Hamilton Road and learn about the latest weed control research. There, Dr. Kasim will lead a walking tour showcasing his different program approaches to weed management using existing and new products.
You're going to hop on a chartered bus and you're going to go to off our main research station to Hamilton Road where all the weed science research is located. And he's going to take you a little walking tour and over everything that he's doing in that area of weed science.
The field day culminates with a catered lunch. As in the past, it will feature tri-tip. This year, attendees also will get to sample a curry dish made with Kalmati, a basmati type from the rice experiment station. Attendees also will be able to taste Kalroma, a new jasmine type, as well as Roxy rice and the premium short grain in the pipeline. Last year, because of unforeseen problems, the sushi was a last-minute no-show. But Harold said he's confident that Raw Bar, the Chico restaurant that rolls the sushi at the experiment station, will be able to serve it.
Once the second repeat of the field tours are over, we're going to have our big lunch, and it's going to be catered by Ms. Gail Jenkins, and she's going to have our traditional tri-tip and other things at the lunch. We're also going to have several rice dishes for our visitors to taste this year. We'll have a basmati dish or a kalmati dish featuring one of our, you know, the basmati type rice. We'll also have a taste of Kalroma, which is our newest jasmine rice out there. We'll let you taste the new Roxy rice that we're hopefully releasing this year, the RXM21. And then we'll also let you have a taste of the new premium quality short grain, the 17Y2087 that we talked about earlier. We're also going to have sushi. It's going to be catered by the Raw Bar out of Chico. So we're going to have a little bit for everybody at the field day.
I get hungry just thinking about the spread they'll have up at the Rice Experiment Station, and it will be a fitting way to cap off a half day filled with research and information for rice producers. See you in Biggs. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.